When it comes to protecting the Internet's dot-com realm, there's a lot on the line, says Patrick Gallagher. He's the director of the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Taking into account both business-to-consumer and business-to-business transactions, online commerce in 2007 accounted for more than $3 trillion in revenue for U.S. companies. In the business-to-consumer e-commerce space, the United States economy enjoyed an increase of more than 500% between 1999 and 2007. And while retail sales fell 7% during this last recession in 2009, online retail sales grew 2% to reach $135 billion. U.S. commerce sales from smartphones and other mobile devices grew more than 200% compared to the previous year, 2009, reaching $1.2 billion.
Little wonder, then, that the Commerce Department, along with NIST, the International Trade Commission, and the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, recently hosted a symposium on cybersecurity in the commercial space. James Lewis, director and senior fellow with the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington, told the symposium that for the most part, when it comes to cybersecurity, most Americans and business leaders prefer to live in the moment.
We as a nation won't do anything meaningful about cybersecurity until after some big event. This is sort of the pattern in the U.S. But it's a few years off, you know, and so we have some time to see if we can get ahead of the trend line, if we can get ahead of the curve. And that might be a good task to think about today. This really isn't about war. I mean, they're sure there's a risk there, maybe in the future. It's about competitiveness, and particularly economic competitiveness. So think of it as a competitiveness issue with some military implications. We did a quick count at CSIS, sort of a running list of how many major events in cyberspace there's been in the last 4 years. Came up with about 60 of them, and they include the theft of advanced military technology, penetration of classified networks, massive corporate espionage, and penalty-free bank robbery. You just have to love this world, right?
Don Proctor, Senior Vice President for Cybersecurity at Cisco, counsels that being mindful of the law of unintended consequences is a good rule of thumb in trying to determine the right role for government in protecting cyberspace.
We have great success models for industry and government working together, and I'll point to the work that industry has been doing with NIST and Pat's team and Cedar Furlani's team on the SCAP protocols, which will bring us to a point where information systems can be monitored for security compliance on an ongoing basis rather than audited manually on a checklist basis. And it's a great success story for industry and government working together towards a shared goal. But we also in our history have cautionary tales. In the early 90s, we had a set of protocols called GOSIP, the government OSI protocols, in which the government decided that it would mandate through its purchasing power a new set of protocols, not the protocols that had been widely adopted by industry, but a different set of protocols, and that it would require every business that sold information technology products to the government would comply with those new protocols. Billions and billions of industry R&D dollars were directed towards the GOSIP protocols, which were never deployed in a production network. And a couple of years later, the law was rescinded.
Some of the most thoughtful comments on the panel came from Michelle Kwan, the well-respected and longtime former director of U.S. CERT, before that deputy director for IT security at the Justice Department. Today, she's vice president of public sector security solutions with RSA. She says when it comes to the public and private sector defending against cybersecurity attacks, one of the biggest challenges is fully understanding the threat.
Having moved to private sector, one of my biggest battle cries is, it's not just fraud. It's not just state-sponsored. It's not just happening to you. And I think we're just beginning to realize and understand that web that's woven between us. And maybe we understood it before now, but we're articulating it so strongly today, and that's a good advancement. And it shouldn't surprise us as we've moved our life to the Internet. We've moved our life to technology. When I first started in the government, very few of the government employees had BlackBerries. Now we all have BlackBerries, and we look to move to iPhones. You know, our lives are moving quickly, rapidly, are already there. Our children's lives are definitely there. We're beginning to look at this differently.
And Kwan says at a time when most cybersecurity discussions are still focused on phishing, malware, Trojans, and botnets, cyber attackers have moved on to the advanced persistent threat.
And it's not so much where the advanced persistent threat's coming from. It's what the advanced persistent threat is. Think about an attack that lobs in a phishing email, that deploys a Trojan, and allows communication from the inside of your network. It then deploys further malware that eventually steals administrator passwords and now lives in your network and controls your network. That's an advanced persistent threat. And that is hard to combat. The threats and attacks have changed. We're using the same words, but the attacks have changed. They're more advanced. They are persistent. And they are, the volume has been turned up.
That's RSA's Michelle Kwan speaking at the Commerce Department's Symposium on Cybersecurity in the Commercial Space. At the Reagan Center in downtown Washington, I'm Max Kakis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.